Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, this program is live before anyone can ask the question. It is the third day of June, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go for the day's selection of news, as selected by yours truly. I did my job today. That's also where you go to enter the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom is the actual address. I don't know why it is, but it seems like every time I start the program, things start happening and messages and questions. Oh, well. Anyway, the chat room's there. The news is the news of the day is there. And, let's see. What else? Well, yes, of course. The PayPal button. That's how we keep all of this going. This is a listener-supported endeavor and has been for the last, the last 10 years, bearing in mind, of course, that nothing here is being sold. We don't have so much as a t-shirt or a bumper sticker to sell you. The only thing we do here is exist by kind contributions, from you, the Horn Family Commune Congregation, in order to keep this process rolling. And we try to raise $150 an evening. You know that already. So last night, because I was playing hooky to go on, go be on the electric TV box, we missed a night, which means we missed a night's fundraising, which means that we begin this evening. And by the way, that's not to say nothing has come in. Thanks particularly to Paul and to Randy over the weekend. Randy is without fail the first past the post at the beginning of every month. Thank you both very much. And we would have had a $235 fundraising goal this evening were it not for Asa, who jumped right in when I posted something on Facebook and Twitter to the extent, you know, just to say what the fundraising goal was for this evening. Asa jumped in, so we have a $220 fundraising goal this evening. And that's a guess what? Since it is the first of the month, and since one of our other first of the month traditions has become Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, Shirley is up to the task again. She has put on the table $150, contingent upon $150 in matching contributions coming in. So there we go. Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. Your $5 becomes 10 thanks to Shirley. Your 10 becomes 20. Your 20 becomes 40. Your 40 becomes 80. Your 50 becomes 100. And any and all permutations in there. So, like I said, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. If you want to double your money, this is a good evening to do it. You can either use the PayPal button or you can use the traditional mail address. I will mention that now, since I haven't in the month of June. The traditional mail address here is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, Paul Mary Bravo. What is P in the word code? Pineapple? No. Yeah, open septuagenarian. Open. Yeah, Warner Brothers cartoons. So many of those on my brain cells. No, but PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. And a gentle reminder that if you prefer to work by the mail, it is always best to make money orders and checks payable to the Horn or Head On Communications, because making it payable to Bob Kincaid really doesn't work because Bob doesn't get the money. That's all dealt with by Boss Man Wayne, who gets the bills paid. So we've gotten past the obnoxious fundraising mention. Thank you. And hopefully we'll get Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge met. Shirley will be pleased immensely, and we will go from there. As noted, I played hooky last night. You know now, of course, that sort of historic CO2 emissions standards were announced by the EPA yesterday, which in turn resulted in the usual suspects throwing their usual hissy. It's too much to hope that Bill Rainey would stand on the Capitol steps in Charleston and light himself on fire like a Buddhist monk, but, well, you know, I mean, he could do it with coal for all I care. Well, I'd rather he didn't. That shit's toxic. But anyway, they had a hissy. And there ain't going to be any more jobs. All the jobs are going to go away and we'll freeze to death in the dark. All right? Yeah. Only no. But the hissy was on. It's going to kill all our jobs. And I happened to get an email notice. Why they send them to me, I never know. If I was Shelley Moore Capito's campaign, I wouldn't send them to me, but she did. Shelley, arching a bad wig, because she was having a telephone press conference featuring herself and Bill Rainey of the West Virginia Coal Association, and by God, they didn't waste any time. Shelley announced that she would stand forever beside for our West Virginia coal jobs. And Bill Rainey said, that President Obama has thumbed his nose at West Virginia. How about that? Cutting CO2 emissions is now nose thumbing. Contemplate the idea and the mind that hatched it. Yeah, well, but it was comedy gold. Somebody from the Wall Street Journal asked Shelley Moore Capito what her position was on climate change. Whoop. I can't hardly mention this. Still no tequila bottle. Still no swirly straw. Damn. Because really, this challenges my tenuous grip on reality. Upon being asked about climate change, Shelley Moore Capito said,
well, the weather is changing every day.
Daggummit, I wanted to go out and scream at clouds, but the day was so beautiful, there weren't any.
Well, the weather's changing every day. I don't know about this climate change. Let me turn this over to Bill Rainey.
And then Bill Rainey went on to talk about how the government, how that Obama had thumbed his nose at Appalachia. You know, we can't have any brown people thumbing their nose at good white Appalachian people. I mean, it's intolerable, don't you know? Sheesh. but it just it went on and on and on like that. One of my favorites was when Bill Rainey said that it was a political fight, not a technical fight, and then went and but also said that these standards aren't even based on a they're not even based on a consensus science, as if science is something that you arrive at when you go to a lunch meeting over the rubber chicken. All in favor of gravity? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if we've got consensus on gravity. Okay, let's move on to something a little simpler. Can we get consensus on the law of conservation of mass and energy? Is it going to cost coal jobs? I don't think we can get consensus on that either. These are, and let's see, Nick Rahal, my congressman, ran out and opened his mouth and let the bats fly out. My particular favorite is, you know, we've got a carpetbagger running for the 2nd District Congressional seat. His name is Alex Mooney. He used to be, he's married to a surgeon. They're from Maryland. And he used to be the chair of the Maryland GOP until they ran him out of town or something. And when he ran out of town, he ran right across the border into West Virginia and decided that we needed him to be a representative of us in the Congress. And he wanted to know whether West Virginians could trust Nick Casey to protect our coal jobs. Okay, that's an interesting statement. But he spelled it V-I-R-G-I-N-I-A-N apostrophe S. Now, I try not to be too much of a spelling and punctuation jackass. But really, you're running for a seat in Congress and you cannot tell the difference between Virginians plural and Virginians possessive? So not only do we have a carpetbagger running for the, because they were fresh out of, we just didn't have anybody in West Virginia stupid enough to be a real GOP congressional nominee. So we had to farm one in, contract out, whatever. And he's going to run against a guy named Nick Casey. And Nick Casey is, he's got a coal crush too. That's the problem with, but it's going to be hell among the yearlings come November in West Virginia, because none of the Democrats have quite yet figured out that they didn't learn the blue dog lesson, that trying to be Republican light is people will just vote for the damn Republican or stay the hell home. Why in God's name would anybody who gives a damn about the future of West Virginia vote for Nick Casey? I mean, I think the guy was a tobacco lobbyist or something once. He's the high priest of the cult of Manchin. And so why would anybody who isn't just another shameless coal pig bother to vote for him? Fortunately, people in the 2nd District of West Virginia have a choice. They can vote for an independent candidate, a fine fellow who's been on this program, by the name of Ed Rabel. And Ed would be a fine addition to the Congress. I could very easily see him standing up and speaking to, and you know, bless his heart, he's talking about the toxic effects of coal on Central Appalachia, and he's given people in the 2nd District a lot of damn fine reasons to vote for him, but he ought to be able to run as a Democrat, because those are Democratic positions, principles. But the Democratic nomination is locked up by a coalocrat. So as a result of all of that, I got a call from MSNBC, and they wanted to talk a little bit about climate change denial and the hissy that was being had in Appalachia, and I was more than happy to oblige. So down the mountain, Agnes and I went, and you know, it was so she's just awesome, Agnes is. When you do the TV things, little things become crises. So we went up on, we went up on the bird. Things went live about 30 minutes before, 25, 30 minutes before the segment. And I'm hearing the talk, and I hear, oh my God, his head is shining. I thought, really? I try to comb the halo back a little bit. But no. It was my big old alien head, pale forehead that got sort of, well, I was running around Washington, D.C. in the sunshine without a hat on, and got that whole Christopher Pike after the radiation incident thing going on my forehead. And Agnes was right there. I mean, just lickety-split, man. She was digging through her bag. And, I got it. And she comes running over, and she whips out the compact with the neutral face powder, and she's... I mean, she's putting that powder on like a ninja. And, all right, the shine is gone. Stand down from Sweat Condition Alpha. The shine is gone. His head is no longer shining. Hey, there's a little shine on his nose. Can you hit that? You know. She's awesome. She's just awesome. And she sat there and took some pictures before everything started rolling, and she didn't make funny faces at me to crack me up or anything. And it all came off rather well. And in point of fact, I had a note prior to airtime from Kate. She said, and you know, there's a story rotator up at headonradionetwork.com. What is that gross pic on the website? Kate asks. Looks like deformed clams. Please take it down. The rest of the page is gross and sad enough. That gross pic on the website, Kate, is what a human being's lungs look like after they have worked in coal mining for a lifetime. Those are black lungs. That's what a black lung looks like. And that's the image that accompanies the post I wrote about Mitch McConnell taking a big steamer on people who've worked in coal all their lives by saying, well, a vote for my opponent is a vote for a guy who thinks that coal makes you sick. Did the check clear? Good, because we all know coal's toxic. But the check did clear? Yeah, a vote for my opponent's a vote for a guy who says that coal makes you sick. Because ain't nobody ever made sick by coal. I put coal on the cornflakes every morning, and it's right good for me. And my lovely wife, the former Secretary of Labor, why, goodness me, she's soaking in it. Right? Yeah. So, no, I'm sorry, Kate. The deformed clams are not going off the website. Because that's what something like 100,000 pairs of lungs have looked like here in central Appalachia. Yeah. So that brings us to this evening. Because we kind of missed out on Moran Monday yesterday, didn't we? But then again, we didn't miss out because, well, the Morans were all over the place. Lord God, Billy Bob. Shelley Moore, Nick Rahal, Joe Manchin. I thought Joe Manchin was just going to bust. Let's check into Joe Manchin's remarks on the EPA rules. Oh, by the way, while they're having their little hissy, don't tell the Repiglicans but that 30% that 30% requirement that coal fired power plants, those emissions standards, they're already halfway met. So all that business about, well, we can't possibly do that. The technology doesn't even exist, and that one in our White House won't let us have clean coal, even though it's just a damned advertising slogan. No. Let's see. Let's really do. Courtesy of Ken Ward Jr. over at Coal Tattoo, the Coal Tattoo blog at WVGazette.com. He was kind enough to excerpt some of the idiocy that went squealing out of the mouths of morons. Let's check in with Joe Manchin. There is no doubt that 7 billion people have had an impact on our world's climate. Oh, that's a big deal for him. However, the proposed EPA rule does little to address the global problem with global solutions. Instead, today's rule appears to be more about desirability than reliability or feasibility, with little regard for rising consumer prices, the effects on jobs, and the impact on the reliability of our electric grid. Can we take that last one first, Joe? Using reliability and our electric grid only works when done in the same sentence as a reference to the unness of the reliability. Well, it's a perfectly reliable electricity grid. I mean, you go over and you flip the switch, and most of the time the lights come on. You know, unless we've had some rain, or an 80 mile an hour land hurricane that wipes us that nobody's ever seen before in living memory, and wipes out electricity to West Virginia for 2 weeks, or if we have a superstorm that comes in from the Atlantic and mixes with the warm air mass and turns into a damn blizzard that wipes electricity out for another week. Or, I mean, you know, it works most of the time. Reliable. I mean, it kind of. The president's own Energy Information Administration predicts that coal will continue to provide nearly a third of our electricity through 2040. But the rule seems to ignore that reality. No, it doesn't, you moron. And that's one of those "ah, how the mighty are fallen" moments too. I remember when the likes of Joe Manchin used, "Well, half of our electricity comes from coal, not anymore." Now he's writing. Now his flacks are writing things like "almost a third," which could be 29%. Now, I'm no wet behind the ears ninny. I realize that number is going down because the amount of frack gas is going up, and that's another conversation. So too, another conversation is the conversation we should be having about wind farms and geothermal and solar panels, and subsidizing that instead of the toxic, pernicious terminal coal industry. But just back to that first paragraph real quick. The proposed EPA rule does little to address the global problem with global solutions. Gee, Joe, I had no idea that the EPA had the power to promulgate rules for Argentina or South Africa or China or India or Russia. Got some ambitions going on there, don't you, Joe? Yeah, Joe does. These people are fools. And like I said last night in talking with Chris Hayes, I'm at a loss to understand why we even pay attention to them anymore. Because I mean, they have become collectively, it's like they're all suffering from William Crystal disease, where all they're any good at anymore is just being wrong. But they are very good at that. So Joe is essentially saying that because we can't point a gun or a missile or something at another country and say, well, you got to lower your carbon emissions too. You know what? The rest of the world's working on it, Joe. We're not. What was it? The poll came out two years ago, taken among God knows how many countries, and the poll question was, what country do you see as the number one threat to peace in the world? Number one in that poll was the United States of America. Number two was Pakistan. They weren't even in screaming distance of number one. You got a lot of work to do, Pakistan. Or if you're a hillbilly, Pakistan. Right? And we are perceived as the greatest threat to peace in the world because we are. And it's not just bullets and missiles and ships and planes and bombs and drone strikes on wedding parties in Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's not just that. Hell, even the Pentagon realizes that climate change is a threat to world peace, or such peace as the world may have. And as climate change grows worse, the threat is going to grow worse along with it. And so when the United States refuses to do anything about climate change, we are directly contributing to an increase in warfare and violence. And then Joe continues to piss and moan. The EPA has proposed rules that are not based on any existing technology that has been proven on a commercial scale. The only point, the only difference, the only problem there being that he is, what's the word I'm looking for? Lying! Because again, 15% of that 30% that has to be met by 2030 has already been achieved. This was kind of a, in many ways, these emission standards, which, by the way, the EPA had to implement because the Supreme Court, the Rats Court, the Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia Court, the Rats Court, told the EPA it had to. I mean, EPA wasn't sitting around in indolent boredom. Oh, what do we do today? Hey, let's regulate CO2 as a pollutant. The Supreme Court of the United States said, thou shalt. And nobody at the EPA said, how many divisions does John Roberts command? But the rules as promulgated, there's sort of a participation trophy for the aging, pathetic, whiny, privileged, rotten coal industry. Okay, coal industry. We know you're a little, yes, you're differently abled. But we're not going to ask you to do anything crazy. Just get 15% better than you are in 16 years. You can do that. We know you can. Because we believe in you. The problem, though, the really essential problem with the failure of the political class in places like West Virginia and stupid remarks like these, and I good God, there's a stack of them. Is that what you have here, by way of analogy, is an officer of the Titanic, as the ship goes under the waves, standing on deck. I mean, let's see, just so you'll get a real flavor for it from Joe Manchin. The U.S. has already been a leader in proving to the world that we can produce coal cleaner today. Utilities and their providers have already reduced carbon emissions by 23% compared to 2005 levels. I think he's made our arguments work. And are projected to reduce carbon emissions by an additional 15% by 2020. And there's a bunch of... here it is. We must continue to invest in innovative technologies, including clean coal and natural gas technologies. Had to get that natural gas mention in there. Did the check clear? Good. To ensure our energy supply remains accessible, affordable, and reliable for all Americans. This is the political equivalent of a guy standing on the deck of the Titanic as the ship slips under the North Atlantic waves, screaming, "This is the greatest passenger liner ever built." Because this stuff is going away. But within the orthodoxy of coal in West Virginia, no one is allowed to say that. Not Joe Manchin. Not Shelley Moore Capito. Not David McKinley. Not Nick Rahal. Not Evan Jenkins. Not carpetbagger Alex Mooney. No one is allowed to say that someday there will be a West Virginia without coal. Because it has reached a point that saying that, and I mean, in this particular instance, I mean no offense, it has reached the point that saying that for a politician in West Virginia is like saying someday people will realize that Jesus wasn't born of a virgin and that he really didn't get up out of the tomb after he was dead. In other words, saying that someday there will be a West Virginia without coal is nothing short of the most rank, apparent heresy. Mountaintop removal yesterday, mountaintop removal today, and mountaintop removal forever! I mean, there's, like I said, there's a stack of stupid... Oh, by the way, what I was telling you about the Democrats, you want some proof? Here's Natalie Tennant, Democratic nominee for Senate of the United States, who is going to get beaten like a borrowed mule by Shelley Moore Capito.
I will stand up to President Obama, Gina McCarthy, and anyone else who tries to undermine our coal jobs. Washington bureaucrats need to understand these are not numbers on a balance sheet. They are real people with families to feed. I refuse to accept that we have to choose between clean air and good-paying jobs when I know West Virginia can lead the way in producing technology that does both. Bullshit, Natalie.
God damn, wake up and smell the silica dust.
These are not numbers on a balance sheet. They are real people with families to feed.
Guess what, Natalie?
dead in mountaintop removal communities were real families once, too. And they had families to feed. But it's hard for a person who's breathed mountaintop removal poison for 15 or 20 years and had their bodies rot in, from the inside out. It's kind of hard for them to feed their families. But by God, they don't even show up on a balance sheet for you, Natalie. Shame on you. Oh, she makes me sick. Then there's the teabagger David McKinley. For President Obama's climate change policies to work, the rest of the world would need to be in lockstep with us. Lockstep? Really? We're going there? Oh, no, no, he didn't say goose step. While he may be able to circumvent Congress, issue executive orders, and use regulatory agencies to accomplish his goal at home, this authority doesn't extend to the rest of the world. But just a little bit ago, Joe Manchin was saying how we weren't providing global solutions to a global problem. Countries like China and India are not following the same path. Yeah, be damned. I guess the word leadership, David McKinley, it has a name. You wouldn't know it if it came up and introduced itself to you, but it's a real thing. And what we're talking about here is trying to, I mean, granted, we're not leading. We are so not leading on this issue. But this is at least a mild attempt to show that we're trying to participate in the process instead of just becoming a global climate change pariah state. But this is an attempt to not be a complete disaster. It's frustrating after a while. It really, really and truly is. By the way, here at 22 minutes before the hour, I am proud to announce that thanks to Diane, we are we are only $130 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you, Diane. Thank you indeed. See, that's how it works. Diane just turned her $20 into $40. You can have that too. Everything up to the first $150 through the door. PayPal button, you know where it is. So that's what my yesterday was all about, but God knows there were a bunch more morons. And I got it. Well, we're sort of transforming or transferring Morin Monday into Thorn in the Side. What am I doing? Into Titanic Tuesday. See, there was a Titanic reference earlier. And I can't. I just. We may be all over the board, but that's okay. I just can't let this go. This is too rich. Faith found the story first and posted it on my Facebook feed. And I couldn't stop laughing. Because Faith even went so far as to do the bumper, the, you know, do the bumper and everything. Because you can't, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And of course, I mean, you know where it's going to go. No, it's not a coal story. Here it is. Oh, here it is. I mean, here it is. There is no end. There is absolutely no end to the freakout that can be had from a right-winger at the mere mention of
S-E-X.
Now, bear in mind, Marjorie Holston is said to be a homeschooling expert. Oh, really? And as a homeschooling expert, she knows that the Common Core is going to turn our children into a bunch of little marching sex-crazed Maoists. Because the way Common Core teaches children about the SEX, well, it's just gonna it's gonna be obscene. She said this all to some radio yammerer by the name of Oh, I got it here. Jan Markle. And I think we just best get to the audio. Take it away, Marjorie.
Many states have obscenity laws, and the materials here are obscene. So if you're going to ask me, how can they teach the kids? Because many, many states have exceptions so that if it's taught in a school, it's an exception to the obscenity law, so our children can be seeing things that are absolutely obscene.
I can't talk about some of the things you've given me here.
Yeah, you would be in trouble. If I were to read some of the curriculum over the air, you would get in trouble because of the obscenity laws.
I haven't.
Really? She'd get in FCC trouble for reading Common Core sex ed curriculum? What, does really? The Common Core sex ed curriculum includes the 7 dirty words you can't say? Really? Go figure.
In front of me, I can't talk about it. Can't do it.
Nope.
Can't
and
talk
but
about
that
it.
Is being taught. What you're seeing there is 7th grade curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
People, you'll have to use your imaginations, but not too much. But wake up for what your children...
Yeah, because she's not giving them a website where they could go and actually read it. Because then they would find out that she is a liar. Yeah.
Children are being taught. And I want to add, too, people say to me, why would they teach such awful things to our children? If you go deep down and you connect the...
Really? She's talking about sex ed and awful things being... Really? Thank you, Goddess of Irony. I will be... I don't know. I'll crucify a rubber chicken in your honor after the program. She's talking about sex ed, and then she says, if you go deep down. On a show where the host can't talk about... Yeah, the Goddess of Irony, she never takes a day off.
Those dots, you see that when children are desensitized to sexual things, it affects their ability at a later date to bond with a spouse. And so if you have somebody who can't bond, they're not going to have a stable marriage. When you have unstable, broken households, how do they vote?
Mm-hmm.
Democrat. So this has...
Huh? What seat is high? How did we get from Common Core and sex ed to... And then they'll vote Democrat. I think she's not only got some really, really rot gut mezcal, she had the worm before she went on air. I
I got to try to figure that out again. Because I'm not having a hell of a lot of luck processing that. Let's just back up a little bit.
Very. And I want to add, too, people say to me, why would they teach such awful things to our children? If you go deep down and you connect those dots, you see that when children are desensitized to sexual things, it affects their ability at a later date to bond with a spouse. And so if you have somebody who can't bond, they're not going to have a stable marriage. When you have unstable, broken households, how do they vote?
Mm-hmm.
Democrat. So this has a very evil underlying intent.
Because voting for a Democrat is by definition evil. And the way you make children grow into adults who vote evil is by teaching them not how to die from having sex and where babies come from. Maybe teach them a little, maybe teach the boys how not to be all rapey. Hell. I told you there was a reason why we had to jump to this right away. And that was, you know, that wasn't even the best part. So she was also interviewed on The Daily Show by Jessica Williams back in 2012. This woman's been around the block, or as you'll see, around the farm. Marjorie Holston is against, of course, teenagers watching sex on the internets. And in that exchange, Marjorie Holston said, that's how I taught my children about sex. We started with a boy guinea pig. We had a boy and a girl guinea pig that clearly liked each other. You really couldn't see anything because they're big, furry little fuzzball things. I mean, that's why there isn't guinea pig porn movies. What kind of a mind do you have to come up with the phrase guinea pig porn movies? Ooh-wee! Well, doggies! No, not doggies, guinea pigs, goddammit. But, yeah, like I said, Faith did all the legwork on this, right down to right down to the bumper music. And, yeah, you kind of got to. Remember, we're going to teach children about sex by having them watch guinea pigs. My God, if they grow up into adults, never mind worrying about them voting Democrat. They'll all have coronaries trying to go as fast as the guinea pigs. Damn! This is for you, Marjorie Holston.
Muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right in the evening. It's pretty pleasing. Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam, do the jitterbug out in Muskrat Land, and they shimmy. Sam is so skinny, and they whirl and they twirl and they dangle, singing and jinging a jangle, float like the heavens above, looks like Muskrat Land. Sam says, Susie, honey, would you please be my missus? Susie says yes with a kiss. starts to giggle. Any whirl, any twirl, any tangle, singing and jangling a jangle, floating like the heavens above, looks like a scrap
My favorite part of that song is the captain's synthesizer muskrats making synthesizer muskrat sex noises. I don't know where the rest of the program's going to go. Honest to God, I don't. A little reminder as we move toward the really muskrat. I thought the Christian homeschoolers wanted their children to grow up and have nice missionary position sex where she lays back and thinks of England or says to herself, beige, I'll paint the ceiling beige. Guinea pigs? Do it like, huh? I can't keep up. I really can't. They're against people who love each other and happen to be of the same gender getting married, but they want their children to learn sex facts via vicarious bestiality. Help me. I'm whipped. I'm licked. I'm done. These are some weird damn people. That's just honest to God. That is all in the world you can say about it. They're weird. These God standing up, fearing Bible thumping fundies. So we will. We will take our top of the hour break. It's Tuesday. Feels a hell of a lot like Monday to me, but that's my fault. A reminder. Because the telephone processor is literally smoked, and because I've got to do some diagnostics and eventually figure out somehow to ship it back to Massachusetts and get it fixed, we got one phone line. And let me tell you that number again. Jot it down somewhere, maybe for handy purposes. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. That's how you go about ringing into the program and participating in conversation radio. Again, another reminder, it's not like the wonderful six lines that we could have on hold before. If I'm on a call with somebody, you're not getting through, so you best bet is to just wait till the end of that call, cross your fingers, and dial again. Oh, dear God, Sparky. I'm looking at a link. I have no way of opening it. I don't know if I even want to, but the message is simply a YouTube link and the words guinea pig porn. Please tell me there's not. It's the please. I think I'm begging. But anyway, let's take our break. And again, we are we're $200 away from our fundraising goal for the evening. And there is a $150 challenge courtesy of Shirley in Wisconsin on the table. 20 of that has been met, which means that there's 130 more matching dollars out there. You wanna double your money? This is a good night to do it. This is Conversation Radio. Listener supported. independent, and absolutely uncensored. This, then, is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
In America, we don't have to choose between the health of our economy and the health of our children.
Green News Report special coverage.
As president and as a parent, I refuse to condemn our children to a planet that's beyond fixing.
President Obama unveils historic new rules to cut carbon pollution and take action on climate change.
We have a moral obligation to act on climate.
All of that acting and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why do you say that environmentalism is a rich white person's concern?
Oh, CNN, just because Ann Coulter is alive doesn't mean you have to invite her on TV and ask her opinion about stuff.
Well, because you're talking about, you know, entire genocides if we don't have fossil fuel.
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. Causing genocide by getting rid of fossil fuels. Nailed it, Ann Coulter.
This is CNN.
Tell me about it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. Very big news week this week. Landmark announcement from the Obama administration's EPA about new standards to curb carbon emissions. Of course, the folks representing the fossil fuel companies, that is to say largely but not entirely Republicans, are going nuts. Our friend journalist David Dayan tweets, quote, retired coal plants to double as death panel hearing rooms under new Obama carbon plan. True or false?
I think you could say that's false.
Oh, okay.
But indeed, it is one of the strongest actions ever taken by the United States government to fight dangerous global warming. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy on Monday rolled out the first ever U.S. standards for cutting carbon emissions at the nation's existing power plants.
In 2030, when the states meet their final goals, our proposal will result in 30% less carbon pollution from the power sector across the United States in comparison to 2005 levels.
That is cutting emissions from power plants 30% below 2005 levels by 2030, the next big component of President Obama's climate action plan announced last year. U.S. power plants are the biggest source, accounting for nearly 40% of U.S. emissions. Now, these are draft rules that will be finalized over the next year. The proposed standards are tailored to each state. It gives states broad flexibility to choose how best they will meet those standards. They could switch to cleaner sources of energy, invest in energy efficiency, conservation, and pollution retrofits, and they could join regional cap and trade programs to spur investment.
And these new standards are remarkably business friendly. This is not unlike Obamacare in that it seems like he went out of his way to present a plan that would be accepted by business, by the power plants, by the fossil fuel companies, at least as much as you could, and still curb emissions in any kind of meaningful way.
Remember, these new standards are legally required under the Clean Air Act and several Supreme Court decisions. Obama is using executive authority because Congress has failed to act. But even though the new standards are required by law, the fossil fuel industry has promised an epic battle of litigation and legislation to stop it.
I'm shocked. Really?
Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called the standards a war on coal that puts, quote, a dagger in the heart of the middle class. And like clockwork, the industry always deliberately overstates the cost of cutting their pollution, charging that it will wreck the economy. We desperately need to pollute. But as Administrator McCarthy pointed out, they have always been wrong.
In the 60s, when smog choked our cities, critics cried wolf and said EPA action would put the brakes on the auto production. And they were wrong. In the 1990s, critics cried wolf and said fighting acid rain would make electricity go up and our lights go out. Well, they were wrong again. So time after time, when science pointed to health risks, special interests cried wolf to protect their own agenda, not the agenda of the American people. And time after time, we followed the science, we protected the American people, and the doomsday predictions never came true.
Now, these new standards will come at a cost, but the EPA estimates that it will ultimately lower electric bills and, most importantly, save $90 billion in avoided health care costs. And the American public is on board. A Washington Post ABC News opinion poll this week found 70% of Americans support regulation of power plants emissions, even if it raises costs. And that includes 68% of respondents in so-called red states. And the world is watching. The very next day after the U.S. announcement, a prominent government official in China pledged that China will limit their carbon emissions for the first time.
The question in the days, weeks, I guess years ahead, are these standards strict enough? Will the fossil fuel companies have any luck in challenging these conservative standards in court? And what difference will it make around the world with other countries looking to the U.S. for leadership here? We, of course, will be keeping our eyes on that, continuing to connect the climate change dots that really nobody else on your public airwaves does. For much more on all of these stories, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Can we go back? This is the moment. Tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over. So we put our hands up like the ceiling can hold us. Like the ceiling can hold us.
Okay, so I apologize for the do it like they do it on the Discovery Channel. But don't blame me. Blame Marjorie Holston, for God's sakes. I mean, she's the one who wants to teach children. Oh, my God. Speaking of which, by the way, it's 5 minutes past the hour. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. We've got a little zoology lesson coming in from Tim from L.A. You're so going to love this. Sex ed with a guinea pig. Instructions on How Guinea Pigs Have Sex, with which I can only presume that Marjorie Holston is intimately familiar. Every 14 to 18 days, the female goes through her cycle. This is when the mating can take place. The female will lie down on her stomach with her rear slightly up. After the mating has taken place, you can expect the pregnancy to last about 3 months. So, says Tim, every 28 days in the missionary position, she's lying down on her stomach, Tim. That ain't the missionary position. You haven't studied your guinea pigs well enough. So every 28 days in the missionary position and 9 months pregnancy is incorrect? Man, if the mother taught her kids sex using guinea pigs, maybe the kid will think they'll have guinea pigs and not a human baby, which reminds me of a joke. Oh, dear God. A father and his six-year-old daughter are in a car. When they see two dogs procreating, the daughter asks Daddy, what are the dogs doing? The father says, and in full disclosure, well, honey, they're making a puppy. Later that night, the husband and wife are making hot, passionate love. When the daughter comes in and asks Daddy, what are you doing? And the father says, well, honey, we're making a baby brother for you. The daughter said, forget it, flip mommy over, and let's have puppies instead. That's not the joke I was thinking it was going to be, but it's still awful enough. Tim says, I wonder if the child who learned sex ed from two guinea pigs will think by going from the back, the mother will create guinea pigs and not a child. My gosh, this country's in the shitter, says Tim. And all God's children said, amen. Yeah, thanks to Sal. Sal decided he wanted to double his money this evening. So we are now, we've now met $30 of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, which means there's $120 more dollar doubling worth to go. And that the overall fundraising goal is down to $190. Thanks, Sal. Thanks very much. Where do you go? Well, okay. I am going to violate our general recent rule against mentioning you know who. Because it's made for much better radio lately since we've stopped mentioning and making constant reference to you know who. I would love to have been in this committee meeting. Yet once you get past how odious it would be to be in, because you'd have to be a member of the organization in order to be on the committee. Okay, I just want you to fly on the wall. We are talking here about Life Savers Ministries and a billboard near what's called the Village Mall in Auburn, Alabama. Lamar Advertising is the billboard lessor. Lamar Advertising, you may recall, is the outfit who pulled down the billboard calling for secession in Montgomery, Alabama. But they had no such qualms with this. Over at Lifesavers Ministry, they had a committee meeting. It must have gone a little bit like this. All right, we're in the soul saving business. We got to worry about our little ones, because you know we know more and more that as soon as they get old enough to tie their shoes, they realize that we are absolutely bullshitting them with all this religion. So we got to find a better way to make sure that parents really really lean in. And make sure that this stuff gets all the way home. We need a billboard, brethren and sistren. Amen, amen. Harumph, harumph. All right, what are we going to put on the billboard?
I think we should put some little children on the billboard.
Well, amen, amen. Jesus loves the little children. Suffer the little children to come unto me. I mean, it's right there. I think we got an image we can work with. And we can probably just steal it from a stock photo agency. Cause see that, we gotta maintain our program. I mean, you know, we're supporting six school buses.
We got this beautiful facility. We're teaching hundreds of boys and girls from around 20 different rough and tough locations throughout Opelika and Auburn, and we're going to teach them about Jesus, right? Right. Rumpf. All right, so we got some pictures of some little children. Now we got to put something on there. Well, Pastor, you done said suffer the little children to come unto me. Yeah, but it's got that suffer word in it, and people don't really get their mind. I mean, all they see is suffer, and next thing you know, they'll be thinking about them children being hungry, and then they'll vote Democrat. Didn't you listen to Marjorie Holstein? Well, okay, well, ain't there some other Bible verses about children in the Bible? Well, yeah, but we don't want to be hitting them right over the head with the Bible right off the bat. Ain't there something else out there? I got it. I heard this one quote one time, and I think it goes perfect here, Pastor. Well, what is it? I think it goes like this. He alone who owns the youth gains the future. Darn, that's good. Say it again so the hard of hearing in the back of the room can hear it. He alone who owns the youth gains the future. Can I get an amen from the congregation, brother and sister? Amen. All right, so then the Bible verse, yeah. Well, okay. So what do you say? Okay, that's a great quote. What do you say after that? We use that line from Proverbs. You know the one: train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. That's perfect. Because see, the first quote makes it clear that you got to get them while they're young. And the second quote's right from God's unerrant, literally to be interpreted, holy word, saying you gotta ruin their little minds early, and then they'll stay rent till they're old. And we got pictures of some little children, and we're gonna have some little white youngins and some little dark skinned youngins, and we're gonna be right there. All right, somebody get Lamar advertising on the horn. And see if they got a billboard. Yeah, Pastor, they got one over there toward the toward the mall in Auburn. We'll get it. Get it for at least a month. All right. They say it's done. You want me to do it by electric check? Well, yeah, I worry about that mark of the beast, but might as well go ahead. All right, we got the billboard. Oh, by the way, who's that quote from? The one about the not from Proverbs, the one about the youngin. He alone who owns the youth gains the future. Deacon, that was your idea. Who said that? Hitler. Well, I guess he did have a good idea now and then, didn't he? So we're going to have the Hitler quote, and then we're going to have the Proverbs quote. Ah, boy, I think we got us a good one. You think I'm kidding? I ain't kidding. No, really, the Life Savers Ministries. Oh, God, that's two rubber chickens I'm going to have to crucify now. I don't know where the words were spoken, Jim. Apparently they were spoken in 1935. Had something to do with him in, you know, the Hitler Youth, whatever. Life Savers Ministry, by quoting a guy who was responsible for the death of millions of people. Yeah, it's 1935. It was about the Hitler Youth program. I mean, nothing really says let's invite children to the saving grace of Christ Jesus like a Hitler quote.
It's for real. There are pictures. See, and here's the fun part. He alone who owns the youth gains the future. That's in big letters. All that business about training up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. That's in small print. That's the fine print. No, really. The Lifesavers Ministry, the Bible itself is the fine print. Of course, I guess you could argue that it's all fine print. Village Mall near Auburn, Alabama. There's a happy ending here. Apparently, after they got the billboard up and... Oh, God. It's right next to a McDonald's. Loving it. It went up and they started having second thoughts. Pastor James Anderegg. Yeah, it's a German name. Anderegg. When contacted by the Columbus, Georgia Ledger Inquirer, said they'd thought better of it. It was probably a mistake to use the Hitler quote. So they was taking the billboard down today. Yeah. Speaking to the newspaper, Pastor Anderegg said, "We are pulling the billboard and certainly never intended to cause confusion." And then he doubled down. I don't know if I've even got the strength in me to parse the whole line. We didn't mean to cause confusion. I'm not confused. Anybody confused? I didn't think so. Well, we're pulling the billboard and certainly never intended to cause confusion. Here's the double down part. Oh, probably should have issued the duct tape a tennis ball warning a little bit earlier, shouldn't I? Yeah, see? there's Jeremy, the duct tape and tennis ball warden. All caps, Bob! Tennis ball and duct tape! Don't put it away. I'd get it back if I were you. He doubled down. We're pulling the billboard and certainly never intended to cause confusion. Herbert Hoover would have been a far better one to quote when he said, "Children are our most valuable resource." That's what I love, the commodification of children. They're a resource. Line them up over there and start fracking them. You can blast a few of them, see if they might have a little bit of carbon in them. These children are a resource. Ooh-wee. We're pulling the billboard and certainly never intended to cause confusion. Herbert Hoover would have been a far better one to quote when he said, "Children are the chicken in every pot." No, children are our most valuable resource. We are a children's organization and had honorable attentions. And nothing less. Nothing. Honorable. Less. Because nothing says honorable about children quite like a Hitler quote about children. And sure, Herbert Hoover. Really? How do you... No, that committee meeting. All right, all in favor of the Hitler quote? All right. All in favor of the Herbert Hoover quote? And all in favor of "Suffer the Little Children to Come Unto Me" by Jesus? Wow, not even one vote? Whoa. Wowzer. Just wowzer. Sorry for violating the Hitler rule.
won't happen again tonight, I hope. By the way, let's see. We are down to $80 left in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very, very much, Kate. Kate just turned 40 into 80. Thank you. So that means $80 left to go in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And $150 to go. Yeah, $150 to go in the evening's fundraising total. Herbert Hoover. Children are our best natural resource. Stuff them into the damn pipeline. They're not making any money. Oh, we've got... No, it's Titanic Tuesday, and we do have some... Sure enough. Oh, shoot. The best laid plans of mice and men. Looks like we're going back there to you-know-who. I mean, not necessarily you-know-who, but, well. Proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher. Brian Fisher, whom we can always count on for one of those references, is all upset about a Human Rights Commission ruling in Colorado. Because the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ruled against Jack Phillips. Jack Phillips is a bakery owner. And Colorado has statutes that bar discrimination in businesses. Jack Phillips is one of those conscience bakers who would probably bake a Hail Satan cake or a Happy Divorce cake or, you know, the same experiment that was run on that couple of goons out in Oregon. But will not bake a cake for a same-sex couple legally married in another state. Nope. No gay wedding cake for you, says Jack Phillips, and turned them away from his business. A complaint was filed with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Jack Phillips lost. The seven-member commission upheld an ALJ administrative law judge's ruling from back in December that said that Jack Phillips had violated the couple's civil rights. This then got Brian Fisher all head up. And naturally, he can't make a cogent argument without just taking Godwin's law out and stomping all over it. When a man is forced, under threat of being sent to jail, to do work he would not do unless he was compelled to do it, he is no longer a free man, but a slave. Really? Slave reference? Really? And that whole early American history thing is just lost on Brian Fisher. And, of course, these are administrative laws, okay? The Colorado Civil Rights Commission, I'm not saying this with certainty, but I'm pretty sure the Colorado Civil Rights Commission has no jail powers. It probably doesn't even have contempt powers. It is an administrative tribunal. It is not a, well, I don't know. I should probably stop it, but I don't think that they can send anybody to the Hooskow. That, of course, was not enough for Brian Fisher. Apparently, someone forgot to tell the stormtroopers in the homosexual movement about the Civil War, the Civil Rights Movement, and freedom of both will and conscience, said Fisher. Not only is Phillips being reduced to slavery, he is now the victim of tyranny as well, since he is being compelled by the government to violate his own conscience. So meet our new overlords, the new owners of the American plantation, the gay mafia. All hail Big Gay, our new slave masters. And yes, along the way, he also used the phrase, the gay Gestapo. I wish these assholes would just pick a metaphor and live with it. Because nothing says slavery like saying that Jack Phillips is going to have to take more money than his goddamn cake is worth. Yeah. Making a man take money, making a man earn money, forcing a man to overcharge for a really... Who eats wedding cake? Really? That nasty-ass icing... Maybe I'm just funny that way. Yeah, nothing says slavery like paying a guy. This just in via Twitter from Fritz. Brian.Fisher.Facepalm. Couldn't agree more. Can't get away from them. I'm reminded that I should probably mention that, you know, with all these deniers out there who believe that CO2 is perfectly benign, I really think they should go and start their little Ayn Rand colony out on Mars. Breathe that CO2. Gonna love it, Brian. Gonna rapture right up, baby. Titanic Tuesday, I am not responsible. And it goes on and on and on. Now, obviously, this woman was not tied down particularly snugly. But goodness me. It's the story of 72-year-old Reginald Robinson of North Carolina. Reginald on Sundays liked to sit down and watch Adrian Rogers, a televangelist, on the TV box. 72-year-old Reginald Robinson of North Carolina also had a taste for gospel music. Lots and lots of gospel music. Enter the daughter of 72-year-old Reginald Robinson. Stepdaughter. She's 32. Mary Catherine Atkinson. And apparently that Sunday morning, as 72-year-old Reginald Robinson was about to sit down to partake of the televangelist Adrian Rogers, of whom I have never heard. The gospel music was going full tilt to the point where 32-year-old Mary Catherine Atkinson just got to the all the way out to the end of her tether. And she went into her mama and said, "Mama," and by the way, she'd been cussing and using the Lord's name in vain. I guess that means she was saying God damn, which is not really using the Lord's name in vain. But she looked, and 72-year-old Reginald Robinson asked her to please stop. And she went and told her mama, Mary Catherine Atkinson did, that she was just sick of Reginald's gospel music and said, "Mama, I'm going to cut him up with an axe." Then she tried to. Reginald Robinson said, "She came in and the attack started. I was just baffled to see it happen. God was with me and I was able to subdue her." He took the axe away from her, which means that Reginald Robinson, 72, of North Carolina, must pretty be a pretty tough old bird. And they let him out of the hospital after they stitched up his head wound. Apparently it didn't get through that skull of his. Then, of course, precious pumpkin, Mary Catherine Atkinson said to her mama said that she came to her and said, "I don't remember why I attacked him." Mary Catherine is presently in the Gaston County Jail of North Carolina in lieu of $100,000 bond. And evaluating physicians have suggested it might be a wise thing to give her maybe a psych workup. Mary Catherine Atkinson is apparently not very good with an axe. Imagine, see, this is that thought experiment. Imagine if she had a gun. Wouldn't be no $100,000 bond. Wouldn't be no Reginald Robinson either. Mr. Robinson would not speculate about what could have made his stepdaughter want to murder him with an axe, but he said he hoped she could get help quickly. He does sound like a decent Christian soul, doesn't he? Here's hoping that he doesn't feel the urge to get himself a freedom protector in case she goes back to the axe. He had no idea of what might have driven Mary Catherine around the bend. No idea at all. None. Zip.
There's a lighthouse on the hillside that overlooks life's sea. And when I'm tossed, it sends out a light that I might see.
I mean, nothing. No idea at all.
Happy Goodman's been gone a long time. Bill Gaither produced a lot of videos for us, with a whole bunch of them, but he produced one that features the Goodmans. Bring Howard and John Minnick out here, and we're going to sing one that says it all for us. I wouldn't take nothing for my journey now. And I wouldn't take nothing for the journey now. Got a ring to hit somehow. Though the devil took me and he tried to turn me around. He offered everything that's got a name. All the wealth I want.
Nope, no idea and I don't know why I've got the weather stuff in the razor out either. I guess these things just kind of happen, don't they? Hmm.
idea. None at all. Oh, and... Darcy on Facebook. The angel food cake must have been looking down on Mr. Robinson. God bless you, please, Mr. Robinson. Heaven doesn't have your place quite ready yet. Ay, 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 ay. And because it is Titanic Tuesday, well, this is... I'm sorry, but this is kind of a necessity. I mean, because this is one of the great, great Titanic intellects of the right wing. I give you Senator Ted Cubanadian Cruz in a minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. America is an exceptional country. When our country was founded, we crafted...
Oh, Jesus, it's going to be one of those exceptional when America was founded. Let's make up history as we go along. Oh, all right, duct tape, tennis ball.
Crafted a constitution that Thomas Jefferson explained would serve as chains to bind the mischief of government. There's never been more mischief of government than there is right now. And the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, are precious to every American.
Hey, wait. You're all law school trained and stuff there, Ted? Son of Raphael? There's never been more mischief in America than right now. Evidence? Examples? Here, let me cite for you a couple. Where's... Oh... Shoot.
The Bill of Rights begins with the First Amendment. For over two centuries.
Wow. It begins with the First Amendment and not the 92nd. Our framers could count their numbers.
Congress has not dared to mess with the Bill of Rights.
No? I seem to recall a little bit of Bill of Rights messing, with particular regard toward the Fourth Amendment, which is a pretty plainly stated amendment, and has been exempted and modified right near out of existence. But, you know, who's keeping count? Right?
This amendment here today, if adopted, would repeal the free speech protections of the First Amendment.
Damn! And nobody out there in progressive land has dared to... I guess we were too busy having sex like guinea pigs or something. I mean, what? The Senate's going to repeal the First Amendment all by itself? I mean, the House isn't going to have to go along with it, and the states aren't going to have to vote, and... Oh, my God! Well, that is mischievous. Maybe that's the example he was getting at.
Mr. Chairman, when citizens hear that, they gasp.
Well, obviously he's right.
As immune as we are to abuse of power from government, citizens are still astonished that members of Congress would dare support repealing the First Amendment.
Well, I am. I am astonished. I would hazard a guess that the entire Horn family commune congregation is positively gobsmacked. I mean, they're going to take away my right to say that Senator Ted looks way too much like Joe McCarthy. Cruz is a poopy head. The flag is falling.
And let's be clear, this amendment doesn't just do it for corporations. It doesn't just do it for billionaires. Nothing in this amendment is limited to corporations or billionaires. This amendment, if adopted, would give Congress absolute authority to regulate the political speech of every single American.
Wow. Political speech. Like back in the 60s and fuck the draft or Dick Nixon before he dicks you. No, or in the modern era, no blood for oil. Nobody's going to be able to say that anymore. Where have all the civil libertarians of the progressive so-called really left gone? Are they under some sort of mesmerized hypnotic spell of that one in our White House? Did it get proposed in the dark and the still of the night while all of us tree huggers were out there worrying about that perfectly innocent Keystone XL pipeline or maybe worrying about all the poisons going into the air from the frack pads or what's happening in the hollers of Appalachia with mountaintop removal? Is that what happened? Did they conveniently deflect our attentions from the real death of freedom in America?
With no limitations whatsoever. This amendment is about power, and it is about politicians silencing the citizens.
I sure do wish. I'm right upset. Ted, son of Raphael, you got some splaining to do. Stand up for America!
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ted.
When did elected Democrats abandon the Bill of Rights? Mr. Chairman, where did the liberals go?
Yeah! Mr. Chairman. Where did everybody go while the Patriot Act was being passed and amounted to the entire Congress taking a big old wee all over the Fourth Amendment? My God, next thing you know, there'll be quartering troops in our homes.
You know, in 1997, when a similar amendment was introduced, here's what Ted Kennedy said about it. Quote.
Similar. Similar, like in, they both had the word amendment in them. Similar.
In the entire history of the Constitution, we have never amended the Bill of Rights, and now is no time to start. It would be wrong to carve an exception to the First Amendment. Campaign finance reform is a serious problem, but it does not require that we twist the meaning of the Constitution.
Of course, 1997 was before Citizens United. In a big way. It was before corporations became people. It was before shadowy, strange super PACs and 527s. It was before the Koch brothers decided to buy an entire government. 1997. 17 years ago. so much has changed.
Mr. Chairman, here's what Democrat Russ Feingold said at the time. Mr. President, the Constitution of this country was not a rough draft. We must stop treating it as such. The First Amendment is the bedrock of the Bill of Rights. It has as its underpinnings that each individual has a natural and fundamental right to disagree with their elected leaders. Not if this amendment passes. If this amendment passes, Congress can say, you, the citizens, are no longer citizens, you're subjects. Because we've repealed the First Amendment and taken away your ability to speak.
And remember, of course, that there is only one potential 2016 presidential candidate who has been anointed by his daddy to be King of America while we're talking about subjects.
Senator Feingold in 2001 said the following about a very similar amendment. Quote, this proposed constitutional amendment would change the scope of the First Amendment. I find nothing more sacred and treasured in our nation's history than the First Amendment. It is the bedrock of the Bill of Rights. It has as its underpinnings the notion that every citizen has a fundamental right to disagree with his or her government. I want to leave the First Amendment undisturbed. Mr. Chairman, I agree with Ted Kennedy and Russ Feingold. And where are the liberals today? Why is there not a liberal standing here defending?
Well, why are you sitting there? You want liberals to stand? Get your ass up out of the chair, Ted.
The Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. Mr. Chairman, 42 Democrats have signed their name to a constitutional amendment that would give Congress the power to muzzle Planned Parenthood and the national right to life. 42 Democrats have signed their name.
Yeah, because that's what he's worried about. The day I catch Ted Cruz, son of Raphael, worrying about the free speech rights of Planned Parenthood and national right to life. Well, that's no. If you believe he's worried about that, well.
To giving Congress the right to muzzle the Sierra Club, to muzzle the National Rifle Association and the Brady Center on Handgun Violence, to muzzle Michael Moore and Dinesh D'Souza, to muzzle the...
Well, actually, I think the Federal Bureau of Prisons has already got charge of muzzling Dinesh D'Souza, but never mind.
The Teamsters and the National Education Association, to muzzle the NAACP, to muzzle the Anti-Defamation...
Yeah, Ted, skip a bit, brother. Tell us who you're worried about being muzzled. The Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, the National Republican Rifle Association.
League, to muzzle pastors and priests and rabbis...
Oh, there we are, the pastors and the priests and the rabbis. Who shouldn't be preaching from the pulpit anyway, but do with real regularity, you know, pissing all over the law of the United States in the first place.
Guys who organize their parishioners to be involved in politics. Mr. Chairman, I'm today introducing two bills to further protect the free speech rights of individuals, and I will be discussing those later in this hearing.
Oh, goody.
But I would note, this amendment, if adopted, would give Congress the power to ban books and to ban movies. And by the way, Citizens United was about fining a movie maker who made a movie critical of Hillary Clinton.
Come on. Say it, Ted. Say it. Say Benghazi. Just once. Please. For us. No?
Mr. Chairman, Ray Bradbury would be astonished. Because we are seeing Fahrenheit 451 Democrats today. The American people should be angry about this.
Fahrenheit 451 Democrats? He really? He's alleged that the Democrats in the Senate have decided to become book burners? Okay.
Did you take your meds today, Ted? You know, the ones that make the voices in your head go from screaming to just whispering at you. Fahrenheit 451 Democrats. Now, what is this? There is an attempt, there is a bill, an amendment to the first in the Senate that would try to slow down the flood of what's called dark money in American politics. You know, the money that nobody has to account for, the money that nobody has to report, the money that is currently ruining that constitutional government that Ted Cruz professes to support. In other words, trying to take some money out of politics, anonymous money out of politics, is the very death, I tell you, the death of the First Amendment. But again, of course, he's worried about his own pocket. He's worried about how often and how quickly the check clears. Because this man is swimming in dark money. It was proposed by Senator Udall. It will not pass the Senate. It needs 67 votes to pass. And the Republicans, and I'm surprised 42 Democrats have signed on to it, the Republicans are not going to sign on to it because they may be religious idiots, they may be theocratic maniacs, they may be a lot of things. But first and foremost, they are recipients of largesse into the God knows how much money of precisely this dark money. And Ted Cruz is, once again, no doubt about it, plain and simple, a liar. The one from back in 1997, Marty, I can't tell you. It was probably some sort of precursor to McCain-Feingold. Yeah. Is Ted Cruz's mouth moving? Yeah? Okay. Liar. About 5 minutes before the hour, and a reminder, if you want to reach the program, we're going to continue until we get something done about the telephone processor. We're going to continue to use the other dial-in number, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, if you want to engage in some conversation radio. It's fine by me. I welcome it. Asa pointing out, you can tell tail gunner Ted Cruz is getting ready to make a run for it when he starts tossing Ted Kennedy's salad.
Well, you know, I thought he was a lunatic, but since he's quoting Russ Feingold and Ted Kennedy, maybe that Ted Cruz isn't so awful after all.
Really? Are we? I mean, I know that. Progressive people can be easily divided, but are we stupid too? Kind of hard to say, isn't it?
Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is still on the table. Just a reminder, we have $80 to go in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And I can't do the math on the fly, but let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
I remember back when Bush was debating Gore, and Gore asked me about McCain-Feingold.
I do recall that, yeah.
Bush didn't know.
No.
He didn't know what he was talking about.
No, he was totally clueless.
So many other things he was totally clueless about, but I thought that would, you know, since you mentioned McCain-Feingold, well, I guess fearless leaders, prompters or his preparation people didn't.
Oh, I remember when he had that weird little box in his jacket where he was getting sheets in. But yeah, Jim, the big deal is that is the success that the right wing have had, and they've been preaching it for years, that money is the same thing as speech. But they never talk about the converse. If money equals speech, then lack of money equals no speech. And at that point in time, the First Amendment becomes sort of a dead letter, doesn't it?
Sort of, yeah. Once you've got the greenbacks to back up what you're saying, it's not going to be heard. Or nobody's going to pay much attention to it because it's just not going to get the coverage. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Like I've said before, the finest government money can buy.
Only it's not anymore. Now it's sort of the tawdriest, Walmartiest government money can buy.
No. You can use any analogy that you want, but you know, it all boils down to the same thing, and that's exactly what's happening. Bob, you know it, and I know it. And at least I think you know it, from what I heard you say. And, you know, listen... several things have been alluded to tonight about things that have gone on in the past, and I just beg you, you know, when I put on there about Nuremberg, hey, don't shoot the messenger of history. It's just, you know, the first thing that came to my mind.
I understand. It's just we tend to, I don't know, we've had a lot of. Sort of, you know, hey, Bob, can we have a few shows without, you know, the guy with the chaplain mustache?
Well, you know, I understand that. But, I mean, I will say this. So many references have been made to fascism and its encroaches. It's kind of hard not to, since that's a really good example not to follow.
I agree. About, the modern strain of fascism, the parliamentary elections for the EU Parliament? My God, it's a fascist coffee clatch now.
Well, yeah. So you don't have to mention any names, but nonetheless.
Speaking of which, did you see the story about the Spanish king abdicating in favor of his son?
No, I did not.
Yeah, King Juan Carlos is stepping down in favor of his young son, who will now become king of Spain. What's interesting, though, is that and Spain, of course, has an unemployment rate that is absolutely ghastly. And
it is bad.
And the Spanish people have taken to the streets saying, "No, no, just step down, go live, enjoy your wealth. No more kings. We want a republic." But they're gonna force another king on them anyway.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think what's the rate? About 28% now.
Yeah, 28% was the last number I saw. It's, I mean, if they didn't, and remember, they got austerity shoved on them at the same time. So even the social safety net that for which Europe had become famous is extremely compromised there.
Right, right. Well, I wonder what the new Spanish king can do for his people.
At this point, he's pretty much figurehead. I mean, he's like any other European royal.
Well...
all he can do is sit around and draw his breath and his pay.
That's really funny. I've got a friend on Facebook who actually painted his father's portrait.
Well, Juan Carlos's?
Mm-hmm. He painted the former king's portrait.
I saw a photo of Juan Carlos.
His last name is Buckley.
I saw a photograph of Juan Carlos and his son today, and bless his heart. Well, no, poor old Juan Carlos looks like a character from a comic opera now.
Well, unfortunately, time does that to us, and people just don't look as nearly regal, I guess, as their portraits now, do they?
No, that's the beauty of portraiture. It's not photography.
Right. I noticed you had your favorite gospel group on there tonight.
Oh, the Happy Goodmans? There's nobody like them, is there?
Well, I mean, I think you... You go back a long way with those guys, and I remember you asked me about them one time. And
hour after hour after hour, and you know what? They're one of the more listenable bunches. I mean, then there were I used to work concerts at my high school gym, not at my high school gym, but I used to work concerts at my high school, gym.
I got you.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
I mean, I know where to place the commas and stuff, but, you know, don't worry.
But anyway, the Churches of Christ where I grew up would have these sort of Church of Christ Woodstocks at our high school auditorium, and I'd run the lights and the sound and everything, and it was all a cappella.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about a cappella like Vienna Boys Choir, anybody's choir, where it's that sort of, or, you know, like the singing that you get in a cathedral in England at Christmas or anything, where it's just soul stirring and just sort of calls your being up toward the ribs of the cathedral. Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, I certainly understand that.
This sounded like a particularly inhumane rat killing.
I've heard these people, and you know, I'm not going to criticize their method of gospel or whatever, but I've never particularly liked that kind of gospel. But ironically, I love black gospel.
All the difference in the world.
It's all the difference in the world. I mean, you talk about people who can sing their hearts out and who can really, you know, profess their beliefs without scratching your eardrum. It is they. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, no offense to anybody.
No, I know you don't. It's just until you sat there and listened to 3 or 4 hours of it.
Oh, my Lord, you probably felt like Alexander the Lodge.
Well, go ahead and fill us in.
Well, you know, that's when they put the lid locks on him.
Oh, yes.
And the Clockwork Orange.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you probably felt like you were...
Yeah, right. I felt like I'd had the little clamps opening my ears up instead of my eyes. You know.
Well, there it is. It's but there are a lot of people who enjoy it, and I remember when I met some lady who every New Year's Eve they would go to Charleston to hear this gospel thing and this the Happy Goodman type. She asked me, "Don't you just love it?" And I said, "No, I don't."
New.
And the look I got from her, Lord have mercy.
My favorite reference of all time to a cappella singing comes, of course, from the Andy Griffith Show, when some reference was made to it, and Barney said, and Andy asked Barney, "Well, you know what a cappella is, right?" Right? Barney goes, "Absolutely." Andy says, "Sing us a little." No, sing us a little, Barn. And eventually begins to snap his fingers and says, a cappella, a cappella.
I see. Well, I mean, you know, humor definitely takes its level. What can one say? You know, there it is. There you have it. But that's about all I had to say. You know, I know there's somebody else who'd like to talk to you. But like I say, you know, as far as the gospel music is concerned, it's fine.
It's fine for other people.
Yeah, it's fine. If you really want to hear one, you ought to, if you can, flip into Bob Smallwood. Now, he really has some people on there that could, set you free.
Well, I'm going to give the Horn Family Congregation commune, a little taste of it when we're done. So you might want to run to the other room real quick, Jim.
No, Queer as Folk just came on for the second running, so I'm going to watch that.
All right, sounds good. Jim, have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. All right, only, and I mean only as a public service. And I ain't going to play much of this at all, but... yeah. That's never family. Oh, no, that's actually halfway decent. We need the good screamy kind. Here, this looks possible. Come on, come on. I don't understand YouTube. Sometimes it just buffers like crazy, and sometimes it just plays right up. Okay, damn, that's frustrating. There's what we're after. We'll get there in a minute. Ugh. Okay, we're going to do some talking. How about some singing?
Well, I'm Carol, but it's good to meet you.
There's some hee-hawing. Oh, no, there's a piano involved. That's cheating. Well, I guess I'd have to dig around for it to find it. So you're lucky. You dodged one. Let's go back to the phones. And by the way, yeah, $80 still remaining in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
Oh, not much. My new phone, I don't even hear the click over, so...
The click over's gone until the box gets fixed.
Oh, that would explain it. Okay. Yeah, who was it? It was Ted Cruz you were talking about?
The one who was worried about the poor little Planned Parenthood.
I just listened to your filibuster, and, they just have no shame at all. And the thing that blows my mind is that not only a third the Republican true believers, but a significant percentage of Americans.
Significant percentage of Americans what?
Fall for that crap. They just buy. They end up voting Republican. I mean, you know, and I don't have statistics or anything. If you weren't on just a financial, you know, if you're making $15 an hour, you shouldn't even be thinking about voting Republican unless you're
at least $250,000 a year.
Yeah. At least.
Okay. No. All right. $100,000. $100,000 at least.
If it lets you, you can be the rap boy, you know, less than that, but it just kind of, it's...
Well, here's one, I mean, if you want to be really baffled, this is one that's just beating me silly. This business with Bo Bergdahl being brought back from prisoner from captivity in Afghanistan. You followed this, right?
Uh-huh.
And the Republicans are all support the troops and everything. Remember them with the yellow ribbons and and we got to fight them in Iraq so we won't have to fight them over here, and God is on our side because Peter owned a sword. That, remember that bunch? 2003, yeah. Thereabouts?
Yeah.
So now they're having a shit hemorrhage, Jim, over an American soldier being rescued and brought back to the United States. They want him shot.
I've been hearing that. It's,
they're calling
it's
him. They are. They're calling him a deserter. There's one guy in particular, and I'm just so proud that I don't know who this sick bastard is. His name is Todd Kincannon. And apparently he's got something to do with Fox News Radio TV Rwanda. And he tweeted publicly, for God and everybody to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted at the father of Sergeant Bergdahl, "I was sorry to see your traitor son come home alive. Hopefully he can be executed for desertion in the Cruz administration. The next GOP U.S. Attorney General is likely to be a friend of mine. I can't wait to discuss your son's execution with him."
Well, you know, they're pro-life until you get out of the womb. You know, that's the one thing. You know, it goes back to the Monty Python song, what was it, the meaning of life or whatever. You know, every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is good. If it gets wasted, God gets quite irate.
But they're so pro-military. They're so pro. And yet they wanted this guy, what, to die in Afghanistan?
Oh, I totally understand the guy's situation, although turning myself over to the enemy, I mean,
we don't even know that's what he did.
Yeah. Because I watched, I was off base, I was watching the air quotes liberal MSNBC, and they had a, I was kind of half listening. It's, I totally identify, you know, with the guy's situation, you know, like you get over it, just like I do with Snowden, you know. I mean, Snowden, I totally support, you know, I don't blame him. Took a lot of guts to do what he did. I mean, he kissed his country goodbye, and then, a guy I kind of used to like, of course, that maybe he has to take that political stance, the former presidential candidate, Kerry, John Kerry. He, coming out after him like that, though I did see parts of his interview, and I tell you, I mean, Snowden had a pretty good idea of the way the system operates. I mean, he's not going to get a fair trial, and he's got a snowball's chance of never getting a fair trial here. I mean, I guess you agree, huh?
Well, I mean, I don't know if the guy needs to be. What do you do to a soldier who behaves morally in an illegal war?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's true. But I mean, every war we've had since I've been alive has been an illegal war, same as you. I got 2 or 3 years on you. I can't think of one war that's been halfway, you could even call kind of legal. I mean, where's that one Reagan, and, you know, they had the 256 Americans, 254, whatever, killed, and that thing, and then, oh, we'll invade Grenada and rescue the medical workers. It's all smoke and mirrors, and then the way the far right just gets all turned on by it, you know, anything they do, and it's just like anything, anything Obama does, it doesn't matter. It's just like when he, which I thought was a slick move, a very, you know, chess-like move.
Well, the five guys, the thing is, the five guys we traded for him hadn't been charged with anything over in the concentration camp at Guantanamo.
Yeah, and you'd act, and plus, they've been in there 10, 11, 12 years. You know, there's a big difference to say you were 30. Yeah, and you're midlife. I'm midlife. I feel like I'm going to live to be 108, but your priorities change. And when you're 40 to 50 or 30 to 40, you know, things take on totally new perspectives. You know, I mean, like right now, I'm wondering how am I going to either get a halfway decent paying job or follow through. I'm trying to get on disability for, you know, brain surgery and blah, 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 and that's taking forever. And it's not so much the brain surgery, it's the aftermath. It's all the fun little things that come along with it. You know, but and then even if I get on it, then I'm wondering what happens if a Republican or when a Republican gets in and they just start cutting back because they have to give money to the oil companies or give oil companies a huge tax break like they just did. What was it, $400 million, $400 billion? Something ridiculous. And then on that, I'm definitely Jim Bobstering. Why are we developing more reusable, renewable energy things, solar and wind? You know? Because the oil companies need, you know, they want their money.
Well, that was one of those lunatic things that, it was probably the most lunatic thing that you'd have to see him. You can just look him up on the internet. Just look up Bill Rainey, West Virginia Coal Association. He's got one of these little pencil-thin mustaches. He looks like the kind of guy that usually walks around with an overcoat and you can see nothing but his socks and hairy legs. He said, and over in Europe, they're going back to they've tried all this stuff. And they found out it doesn't work, and they're going back to burning clean, reliable coal. And thank goodness. And no, he really said that, Jim. And you know, this is going on at like 11:15 in the morning, and it's just too damned early for me to start, you know, gargling with tequila. But that's going to come as a real shock to all those people in Germany who are enjoying renewably sourced energy. To the rate of 74% of production 2 weeks ago. Yeah, that was imaginary electricity lighting up those imaginary German light bulbs.
In fact, I was over at my mother's house the other day, and somebody got some solar panels. And I was like, cool. And I said, well, yeah, maybe Mom, you should try looking into that. But, I mean, she's, being my mother, she's a little bit older than me, and she's in her 70s, and you know, I don't know if, I mean, she probably has the money to do it, I'm sure they throw a whole bunch of, they give you I would imagine a pretty decent deal, and you can probably, there's probably tax credits involved still until the GOP gets control and probably charges you extra if you go ahead and get renewable energy. Because you're not drinking from the fountain of the sacred petroleum.
Right, the sacred hydrocarbons.
Right. You know, I try to be optimistic, Bob, but it's just goddamn hard. I mean,
well, sure it is.
Friday
night I was a little bit late getting to the microphone because I had an opportunity to meet up with an old friend of the program. A fellow by the name of Reverbo. And Reverbo is just a brilliant and funny man with a magnificent take on things. And a long time ago, Reverbo made the argument on this program. He said, you know, we've been sitting here idling the bus into the future
for a long time waiting for people to get on so we could get moving. And we've begged and pleaded with them, you know, hey, yeah, come on, get on the bus. We got to go. We can't wait anymore. We got to go. And they stand outside the bus and they talk about, you know, how they're not sure if they want to see the future, that they like their coal and their gas and their oil awfully well. And the bus keeps idling and everybody's waiting and everybody's being, and it's time to just close the damn doors and say, screw it and go. And there have, from a historical standpoint, Jim, been times in this country where we've said, screw it, we're going into the future. 1861 comes to mind. The slavery is no longer tolerable, so we're going into the future. The late 1950s, early 1960s is another. Jim Crow is no longer tolerable. We're going into the future. When a senator named Norris from Nebraska, of all places, looked down south at North Alabama and the Tennessee Valley and said, it is intolerable in the 20th century that people are still being plagued by starvation, by poverty, by yellow fever. We got to do something about this. And that's how the Tennessee Valley Authority was born, on what was then the cutting edge of renewable, sustainable energy production, namely hydroelectric. And he didn't wait. They said,
yeah, that was during the Great Depression.
Close
right?
The bus doors and go. And we're there. And we're there right now. I mean, how can I put this, Jim? Relying on coal, oil, and gas, relying on hydrocarbons, when we have the technology available to us to leverage sustainable, renewable energy, is like somebody in the Iron Age insisting on continuing to use an Aeschylean hand axe, a stone tool. It just beats the devil out of me.
And the interesting thing about that, I mean, I know basically I'm talking about people in my family. Yeah, and they're pretty intelligent, but they just don't seem that as being a problem. I don't even bring it up, you know. They just kind of think, oh, well, the system will work itself out and whatever. Then I look at all the presidents since I've been alive, and even Clinton, when he put that Clinton's daughter, when he put the solar panels on, what's the first thing?
Carter, and then Reagan took him down. Well, you know, no, it's the same thing. Consider what would have happened in the United States in the 1980s if Reagan had brought home a prisoner of war after 5 years of captivity. I mean, Tip O'Neill would have filleted him in the White House Rose Garden.
Exactly.
And America would have said, oh, by God, that Ronnie Reagan, he's something. It's morning in America. Oh, but let the Negro president do it. Oh, I think we need impeachment hearings. I hope they shoot the son of a bitch. You know, that traitorous American soldier that got brought back. God damn it, it's intolerable.
Yeah, there's a significant minority that cannot stand the fact that he's black. And like I said before, not only that he's black, he's half black and half white, just like most people. I would imagine, going back to slavery days, a significant percentage, because God had their black mistresses on the side, and yeah, it's all right to screw them, but, you know, if they keep the place. I don't know. It's just so hypocritical, it shouldn't surprise me.
Hey, I need to ask you a question. Where is La Fourche Parish?
La Fourche?
Yeah.
My Louisiana geography is not that good. It's not. I don't think it's that far from where I'm located. What's going on over there?
We got a problem. Isaac just sent me this little piece of breaking news. Channel 6 WDSU News on your side reporting Lafourche Parish declares state of emergency after levee breach.
Well, we did it. We've had a lot of rain last.
It's in the Belterre area of Chupik. It happened. The declaration was made 7 p.m. yesterday evening. Crews with the Department of Public Works sandbagged the weakened area of the levee and were successful in stabilizing it, and are now checking other sections for weakened areas. And cause of the breach, due to the weekend's flooding in some of the northern parishes, backwater from Ascension and St. John's parishes put extra strain on the levee that eventually led to the breach. Well, check me, Jim, but aren't we still in the middle of hurricane season?
We're just at the beginning.
Yeah, right? Not the middle,
It's nothing yet. I mean, usually when I was growing up back in the 20th century, you really didn't see hurricanes till basically 2 months, August and September. I remember when I was living in Vegas, it was like one summer where there was like a storm coming in. They weren't all hurricanes, but it was like 20. It seemed like, because they had to go to the Greek, the Greek letters to start naming the hurricanes or the storms.
I ran across an absolutely baffling story a day or so ago. It turns out that a study has been done on damage as done by various storms by name.
Right.
Dig this. More people are injured by storms named after women because they take the storms less seriously because they are named after women.
The people that do get injured and die, I mean, I hate to sound cold-hearted, but I'm kind of getting in my... You kind of caught me in my cynical mood. Yeah, that's too stupid to live. You know, you got to take every storm seriously.
Marty just pointed out with the story down in Chupik, and here comes the Alex Jones Brigade. The Obama administration blew the levees. Ah, false flag, false flag.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of like a girl who's a friend of my mother's daughter, and she's talking to me, being real friendly, trying to make. Then she starts telling me about Alex Jones. And I'm like, I've never heard him. The only time I hear him is like when you play him, or if somebody else plays him. I'm not going to waste my time listening to that, you know. Not even to see what it's like. I mean, I can remember watching Rush Limbaugh when he had his TV show. 20 years ago? Yeah, so once or twice, just to see what it was like, and it was stupid then. And I can't believe anybody even listens. Yeah, I know he's just on radio now. I can't even listen. It's just like I can't watch Fox News to even see the absurdity and the BS that they're pushing. I have to rely on you and various other, I'm just going to call them leftist broadcasters. So I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. Good to hear from you.
All right. Take it there.
All right, take care. Bye now. From down in the wilds of Louisiana-stan, that's our buddy Jim. And just another reminder, we do not have 6 telephone lines to put people on hold for the next call. We got 1 because for all I know, the expensive telephone hybrid unit has gone to its long home. I hope that's not the case, but we haven't had the chance to send it off and get the diagnostics yet. Just got home on Sunday. And it's been pretty busy since then. But at any rate, there's only 1 phone line. So calling and calling and calling and calling
during a when somebody else is on the line is not going to get you on hold because there's only one line and I can't put anybody on hold. Just that's how it works. But at any rate, hopefully you have written down the number. I have not memorized it yet. I've got it on the back of a business card in my wallet. I'm going to write it down on something and hang it from the studio, hang it on the rack here. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. It would be handy if it spelled something, but it doesn't. So 304-574-8178 to reach the program. And thanks very much to Anthony. We have taken Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge down to $75. $75 to make Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Anthony took took his $5.55 and doubled it to $11.10. See how it works? So there's $75 more for doubling your contribution this evening in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Bill. What's happening?
I don't know. I get so lucky to get on a... Well, of course, if I balanced how many times I didn't get lucky when I was 18, I guess, you know, never mind.
Yeah, it's a wash.
Man, it's, look out, Bob. There's 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline.
What?
There's something to make some people say, what the hell did you just say?
Yeah.
What the hell did I just say, Bob? Yes. Quoting from a good song by that guy who didn't let short people. I'll find him one day. Yeah, this whole thing with this fella, I'm surprised that if you want to be really paranoid, what's wrong with these guys? What do you think? What are you? Maybe he was turned. You know, that they turned him, and now he's a, I forget the term they used to use for those kind of people.
A sleeper?
Pardon?
A sleeper?
Yeah, sleepers. Yeah, a sleeper agent, yeah. Well, I've been good at that for the last few years. What the hell? Hey, I'm delighted with myself. I heard the name Snohomish today. Snohomish Washington. And that first thing that pops into my mind was Earl Averill. I said, who's that? Well, he's a guy who played the outfield for the Cleveland Indians in the 30s. And he's a very strong hitter. But in one of the early All-Star games, he bounced the ball off the leg of Dizzy Dean and shortened Mr. Dean's career quite a bit with that injury. It's funny how, so I guess I'm not, my memory isn't totally gone, you know. Some things will crack, look at you with it, and you'll come back and say, yeah, I remember now. Yeah. I missed a good bit of the show, but what you guys seem to be talking about was the return of this guy, and well, it's not just him, it's the whole, no matter what Obama does is wrong. Now, do I agree with everything that President Obama's ever done in his career, in his term? No. But, you know, these guys, if their boy Jesus could be president, but if he'd been elected on the Democratic ticket, or anything other than the right-wing hardcore ticket, they'd find something wrong with the guy, wouldn't they?
Yeah, sure. Well, look at it this way.
It's a miracle, but he didn't
do anything. Barack Obama's in a no-win situation, Bill, because if he had let the young man just die in Afghanistan, the right wing would have been out there screaming, "He left one of ours to die in captivity. He's needing impeached." Right? So that didn't happen, and instead they're hollering, "He brung a traitor home and didn't tell Congress that he was giving up some terrorists what hadn't never done no terrorism. He needs to be impeached."
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a lot of impeachment. You should have heard the impeachment talk that I heard on the radio and didn't know what it was. All I know is the umbrellas took some part in it. The symbolic umbrella was used. Stuff against Harry Truman in the early 50s. These guys are just jump on that thing every chance they get. They can't find enough. And the problem with the president's biggest problem is exactly what you said, Bob. It's race. It's race, yeah. And it's
Do you know? Do you know that Jay Rockefeller, my senator, who no longer has anything to fear because he's not running again, actually called out one of the right-wing senators in a hearing a week or so ago and straight up told him that it's about race, and the man had an absolute hissy.
Oh, I wonder what I'd love to hear what he had to say, you know, word for word what his retort was to that.
I'll
up and thought that Rockefeller, did he get out of bed on the wrong side one day and suddenly become a Democrat?
I've met the man, and as Rockefellers go, I think he's about as good as they get.
Yeah.
He's got a conscience. Nobody in the Senate is. Bernie Sanders isn't as liberal as I want a senator to be. But you know what? I'm pretty much a grown up, and I understand that that I Want a Pony is not on the ballot when I go to vote.
No.
Let me look here and see if I can find the Rockefeller story real quick, because it really was interesting, and I'm glad you sort of tickled my memory about it. Dadgummit. Darn it. Okay, well, I didn't find it there. I'll find it somewhere else.
Well, a lot of times with me, the what caused it is something that goes back deep into the guts of anybody who's been a car mechanic or an electronic repair guy, or, you know, you had to figure out something. Because it also ties into human behavior. In fact, I got into a big beef. My first wife was seeing a shrink, and he gave me that MMPI deal. So we're sitting around, he's discussing it with me, and I'm saying, well, you know, certain segments of my personality started when I was younger and rubbed up against this problem or that problem. And he said, oh, you're making excuses. Well, it's is logic an excuse? Is the reason I got disgusted with the Ford that I had, because it was sucking oil down the valves, because the plastic valve covers got hot and cracked, and the oil was coming right down the pipe and burning and fouling plugs. That was the important thing. What caused this oil fouling? You had to find the cause of something, and then you worked on the cause of it and tried to undo the cause of it. I mean, it's the same thing with a lot of different social situations. You had to work on it to try to straighten out a little bit. You had to work on things to get over some of the crap. And I don't know, Bob, do you know anybody who didn't grow up seeing a little bit of crap here and there?
None.
No. The reason I got hostile and left the project quickly is that there was a constant battle royal against a bunch of kids who were, by the way, they were Caucasians too, all of them, Bob. It wasn't a racial situation. In a interracially mixed neighborhood, the big problem that me and a lot of my friends had were other Caucasians who couldn't, you know, had no brain power whatsoever. But they were hard asses, and they leaned on it constantly. I kept hoping a lot of them would come into the bar, and the one bar where I was working with the bouncing staff was a couple of ex-big-time college football players and a couple of bikers and another two guys who had both done 10 years in the penitentiary. I kept hoping, well, when are these guys going to come in and throw their weight around? I'd love to stand here and watch it, you know. I always enjoyed watching it. You know, getting a good ringside seat was always a pleasure for me, just to
sure.
Stand out in the corner, stand them back and watch these fools, you know. Yeah, so what did I miss tonight besides that wasn't the only thing you talked about.
Oh, Lord, no. We've been all over the place, Bill. It's almost too much to go into.
Well, you guys were busting your asses last week. I'm just thinking of which, how do you do business down there when the crowned heads aren't there?
Their staff are. Their staff are.
Yeah.
And staff is who runs the government, not...
That's what I was driving at, yes.
Yeah. And very seldom are staff just completely absent.
Well, like, how would you think of the intelligence level or the... I have a hard time because of the lack of historical level with these folks. They have no idea of the precedence of the same. It's like a lawyer going into court without having any knowledge of the precedence of the case. You know, what are you going to go in and tweak the judge and lie to him and act like number one? Say, hey, number one, in the U.S. Supreme Court, so these boys don't lean a certain way to start with. And there's not a precedence for it. That certain things haven't already been decided in one way, shape, or form already. And there's the old thing from radio says only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. But so much of the stuff is the same way. I still, you know, I have a hard time that people had to go into court in the 1950s to get rid of the racial segregation. That was basically wasn't it almost by law the way it was being run, that racial segregation?
It was run by law. Jim Crow gets its real impetus from Plessy versus Ferguson, when yes. Separate but equal accommodations were endorsed by the Supreme Court of the United States. The South went wild passing laws to that effect.
I sometimes wonder when you start looking at the cost of human life and treasury during the American Civil War, that certain things hadn't, even though the Confederates lost the war, the Constitution had taken a certain bend, or the court system had taken a certain bend in a certain direction that allowed people to, it didn't cost so damn much, that war cost so damn much. Okay, and we got, so theoretically, we got rid of human slavery, theoretically. But the laws were then shifted. Well, we don't own them anymore, but we'll work the living crap on them. And we'll mistreat them. And you know, what bothers me is the model white folk never got it. I mean, the guys that I met, a few of them who had been, their families had come out of, being Okies. And the hard times of going from the, there across town to across the country, they still hadn't got it. They still thought that the system was perfectly great, and it wasn't their ancestors' fault that they got tractored off the land, and there was no employment, and well, it's your own fault, that kind of thinking, you know?
Yeah.
I think we know better than that.
Well, I absolutely buy it. If not, I hope we have learned better than that.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, and that's one of the things that makes you feel like you're just sort of coming unstuck. In 2014, in the United States, everything we thought about any progress we have made is in question now.
Yeah, they're trying to take it back again. They're trying to undo. I mean, like in the Korean War situation, how these guys in the right, they enjoyed it, but they used everything that went on to attack their opponents. I've heard people to this day, last year a bunch of guys were telling me how much they... Well, MacArthur was right. He should have bombed the Chinese.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, sure. And the Russians in St. Joseph's Town.
Right, because,
we're just
tired of the human experience on this planet.
Yeah. Or this idea of the Ukraine, of pushing. I've heard stuff today that Putin is making gestures toward a few other nations, some of the Baltic states and such. But he may be totally wrong, Bob, but what the hell are we going to do about it? Have things changed in the nuclear weapon line as far as what those things can do if they're...
No. They still wreak real havoc.
Yeah. So as much as I may feel for the freedom of these other people, or, and is it freedom from... The main thing is, it might have been the same thing on this town. There was a lot of grandstanding about communism. But isn't it a case once again of follow the money? And to balance the ticket, so to speak, are the Western capitalists trying to push in there so they can grab the money and get it? And the Russians are trying to hold on and say this is our part of the world. And if there's anything, if the money and the power belongs to anybody, it's those of us who've been here all this time.
And nobody's got clean hands here. I was reading a story earlier today, Bill, about how the Ukrainian forces had essentially kidnapped a pro-Russian journalist. And nobody's really heard much from him since he was taken.
Yeah, you can pass the ball around during war. I cannot justify in my soul the use of nuclear weapons on civilians and such. I can't justify it. But I'll tell you how stupid that we were here. I wouldn't say that George Catlin Marshall was a dummy, would you?
By no stretch of the imagination.
But he talked about if we use the atomic weapons before we landed, if we use them on the spot where we were going to land, and the home islands. How does that sound to you? It's like, gee, look at my kid. He just got back from Japan. He's glowing in the dark. My God.
All right.
It's like you can't seem to educate people enough to the. Well, I'm not. I won't even touch upon what. I think of West Virginia, it hurts, because the people have been taking this crap. I have my own pet theories about maybe the reason it left the South was that somebody else thought there was more money in it for them if they could take it out of the. Well, I'm testing. There wasn't any close love between the small farmers and it's like East Tennessee was the same kind of situation. A lot of small farmers and not a lot of slaves. There was, no fortunes were being made in East Tennessee growing cotton, was there?
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking, or West Virginia. But the modern up-and-coming industrialist saw in your state a fortune to be made selling coal and whatever else they can take out of the ground on the way out the door. And so it keeps coming back to the old follow the money routine. But I'm going to clear the phones because people want to use them, which are basically one line and... It's good hearing you. I wish I had heard more. My highlight of my day is a guy came in and I have the air conditioners in by tomorrow, which is, thank you. Thank God it hasn't been that, thank him, that guy that they talk about, that it hasn't been that hot, but once the air is in, I'll feel like a human being again. Unfortunately, I look the same. You can't have everything, Take care of yourself.
All right. Have a good evening, Bill. You take care. Bye.
Right.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's see, about 11 minutes before the hour, if you want to work in one more phone call, I think we've got time. And we have Devin. Let's see. Yeah, we still stand at $75 to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge.
I hate to see challenges on the table go for want of response, especially, you know, there are some folks here who are there with a matching offer month in and month out, and Shirley's one of them. So, you know, $75 gets doubled to $150 for the people who choose to participate. Hey, Devin.
Hey. there's a little thorn, I suppose. Maybe it's a little early in the week for that, but I keep hearing all this talk about advanced carbon capture technology, and all I can think of is we have carbon capture without the technology here.
You mean forests?
No. We have carbon capture of our entire society and governance.
Well, that's true too. I wasn't thinking quite as satirically as you, but you're absolutely right. Carbon has captured. But then again, you know, then the idea of the advanced, carbon capture is, one, at best it's theoretical. Two, if they really wanted carbon capture technology, the dumb bastards would have voted for the cap and trade bill for whatever problems, and I got a lot of problems with it. But one of the things is, the cap and trade bill of a few years back, Devin, contained an absolute horse gagging wad of billions of dollars for advancing and deploying carbon capture research. But they said, oh, hell no, we don't want that.
Yeah, well, I guess we could work on this global warming thing if we just, made a bunch of dry ice, you know.
God. You can't say stuff like that when I ain't got no tequila.
Have some of the Martian polar caps.
Look, we gave up on...
Water ice is gone, we'll just make dry ice.
Yeah, we gave up on the manned space program, and I am an absolute... diehard proponent of reinvigorating the manned space program and letting Republicans go to Mars and breathe the harmless CO2.
That's wonderful. I wonder how many libertarians would sign up for that.
It depends on if they could smoke dope on Mars.
Well, they could smoke dope if they had oxygen. It'd be kind of hard to light up on Mars.
Don't smarten up a chump. We can tell them we're sending an advanced ship with bales upon bales of Bubba Kush. And they can smoke all they want of it when they can smoke. No, we got to phrase it right. They can smoke all they can when they get there.
Wow. That's just all kinds of fun. Well, they could go to the moon to get ice for their tequila.
Well, there we go.
If they could not freeze to death before they got to it. It gets kind of cold in them craters.
It does. And remember what Shelley, we'll end the program the way we began it. Remember what Shelley Moore Capito said, Devin. The weather's changing every day.
Yeah. We'll send them on a manned mission to the sun. They'll just go at night.
You're wicked.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, did you hear about the teabagger who heard that most accidents happen within 5 miles, within 2 miles of home, so he moved?
Oh. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, the filibuster, I think, was one of your best.
What, this evening's?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. One never knows.
I think the haze work you did was quite a bit better than the other ones. So,
well, that makes me worry about how shitty the other ones were. That's the way my poor paranoid mind operates. It's always a joy.
They give you much time.
Working with Chris Hayes is always a pleasure because even though I can't see him and I can only hear him, he's got a really conversational delivery, and he's always incredibly well informed and very well researched. And he's easy to talk to.
Yeah, he's very social.
Well, one gets the idea that he's very much genuine, and it's obvious how intelligent he is.
And he must be in a great deal of pain working in MSNBC.
I don't think so. I mean, you think he'd be in less working at Fox? I mean, come on.
Well, still, I know there's got to be some producer sitting on his shoulder, you know, smacking him upside the head every time he has a liberal thought, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. But it's the dynamic tension of working inside any portion of mainstream television media. The very nature of the medium itself, Devin, puts profound limitations on things. It ain't the horn. It's not conversation. Everything is timed down to the second.
Yeah,
and that's what you know. That's where being able to do it and do it well and do it within the necessitated parameters of broadcast television make the difference. And that the teams that produce him and Rachel and Ed, they're all absolutely the production staff are pure pro. Just pure pro. Hey, Devin, I got to get out of here. We are right up on top of the end of the program.
All right.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Good to hear from you. Take it easy.
All right.
Our buddy Devin calling from a little further north and perhaps a shade to the east in this state. It is time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who responded to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge to the tune of taking down the deficit. By half of that challenge. Hopefully we will finish it tomorrow evening. I can't calculate what the fundraising goal will be for tomorrow. I'm sorry. I'll try to do it by then. Thanks to you for your kind contribution of your precious finite time in participating however you do in this conversation, emails, Skype chat, the chat room, Twitter, Facebook, and the phones. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.